on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday edition of InvestTalk. It is September 15th. We're halfway through the month of September. Are you a hands-on investor who spends at least an hour a day tending to investing decisions, or are you a once-a-week manager that looks at accounts regularly but on a once-a-week basis and keep up with financial news and economic news, that kind of stuff? Are you just starting out getting to know how this all works, the scope of managing your money in today's world? No matter what your current situation, we're here for you. That's what InvestTalk is all about. We talk daily about the complexity of managing investing portfolios and, of course, the risks involved. One of the biggest aspects of successful managing is managing the risk is to diversify your portfolio across various holdings from different industries and different sectors, different asset classes. So, when you do that, when you spread it out, yeah, all of them don't work at the same time. That's rare. But many of them work at different times, and they offset each other. So when considering how to spread your wealth on various asset classes, you've got to consider a number of factors, and a few of them. One is the expertise that you have. Do you have an expertise in real estate, bonds, stocks? What's your expertise? So how much do you know about something? Another is understanding the risks you're willing to take, the risks that you're willing to, how much, do you really know what the risks you're taking? Whether you're buying a bond, do you know what the risks are and what the risks are of buying a bond? You got default risk. Did you think about that? When you buy a bond, what if you buy a 30-year bond? I guarantee you those people who bought Puerto Rican bonds didn't think that they would have a problem with them. They bought long-term bonds, maybe 8-9%. That's pretty safe. Well, guess what? Not so safe. And think about the financial crisis. The different municipalities across the United States that couldn't pay their bonds. Very few actually ended up defaulting. But that's default risk. What about interest rate risks? Okay, there's other kinds of risks bonds aren't just to buy bonds. You gotta have some knowledge on them. What kind, junk bonds versus investment grade bonds? Municipal bonds versus U.S. Treasury bonds? What are they? What do they pay? What's the risk? Of course, the third aspect is considering the prices. Think about it this way. In the late 1990s, when the dot-com, the S&P 500 got up to 30, S&P 500. Do you know if that's high? Well, what's the historical average of the S&P 500? About 15. So when it was 30, you knew it was high. Do you know what the Shiller P is? Do you know what it is and what the numbers are? These are aspects of managing all your assets, things that you kind of need to know. So I think, trying to avoid all the media hype, whether it's negative or positive, that's not. So you got to step back and say, well, what are the real facts here and what kind of environment are we in? Anyways, I want to thank you for spending this hour. I'll try to make it worth your while, make the most of it. Right now, let's get into the conversation. We can start right now. You can call me at 888-99-CHART, and you can call anytime you want. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, but you still can call. And here's this question that came in before today's program.
Hi, Steve. This is Tim. I'm calling from Boston, and I listen to your podcast daily. Great show. I have a question about stock issuance and stock buyback. Everyone kind of knows that when a company announces that they buy back stock, that's a good thing, and generally prices tend to increase after that. My question really is about when they announce that they are going to issue more stock, what effect that really has, particularly on stock price, earnings per share, that type of thing. I don't know if that's viewed as a questionable thing or a bad thing for the company. Thank you. Looking forward to your answer.
Well, that's a very good question. When they issue stock, that means they're diluting you as a current shareholder by how many shares they have. For instance, let's say there's 10 million shares outstanding at $20 a share, and they want to issue another 10 million shares. That means they dilute you by one half. Now there's 20 million shares. So that means there's less earnings per share spread around. Now, the question is it good or bad? The question is, why did they issue those shares? Did they issue those shares so they can have money to buy another company that is going to make them a lot some more money? Or another company that's not a good buy and may lose them money? Why did they issue those shares? Many times companies issue shares to accommodate options for their employees. So it's always important to know why they issue the shares. You know, are they buying assets with those shares? And if that's so, did the asset actually improve the company's bottom line? And so it's not a black and white situation. It's not positive or negative. It depends on what the issue with your shares are. In my opinion, I don't like it if I'm a shareholder when they issue more shares because I know I'm being diluted. From that point of view, it's negative. I'm being diluted. Now, what the heck are you doing with this money? So now I got to figure out what they're doing with the money and is it a good idea? And, you know, I'm not inside the company. Maybe it is a great idea. Maybe it's not. So remember, there's three ways a company can get money to do something with. To produce money other than, having a good business and make money. They can borrow the money from a bank. They can issue bonds to the public. Both those ways puts money in their pocket. And they can issue more shares. And that gives them money in their pocket. Now they can go use that money to do what they want. But the question is, what are you using it for? Index funds, how do they work, really? How do they really work? Do you know? Do you know what the Dow is? The Dow is, started in 1880 sometime? S&P, I think it was 1920 or so, 23, something. That's when the S&P started. What's the difference between those two indexes? And most people say, well, one's bigger. The S&P 500 is bigger than the Dow. That's just one difference. There's more than that. We're going to talk about that. Also, I want to talk about what are the five reasons to double down and buy stocks now, today? I try to bring both a negative and positive spin to what's going on right now. I don't want to be too negative. I don't want to be too positive. So I try to bring different things. Well, here's some five reasons that maybe this would be a good time to buy when the markets are down, when the stock market is down. How about also talk about the retail sales that report that came out. And finally, what jobs a bachelor's degree pay the most? Go out and get a bachelor's degree. What bachelor's degrees should you, the top 10, what are the ones that pay the most? I got a list. It's kind of interesting. So we're going to talk about those things. Hopefully that will be on the agenda today. Of course, whatever on your mind is what we really want to talk about. The market was up, the Dow was up 229 points. So we had a pretty good day. The NASDAQ was up 55 and the S&P up 25. Now, if I look at the market, the volume, down volume yesterday and then the up volume today, both were weak. The down volume was much weaker yesterday than the up dollar volume was today, but still both of them were weak, not a lot of volume. But I do think that it's kind of significant that the S&P tried to break up today. It's up against a short-term resistance. I mean really short-term resistance. It's right up against where, remember that the 4 or 5 days where the market just collapsed and then 2 or 3 days it came back about, not quite halfway, about a third of the way up? Well, that's where it is back now, back to the third of the way up area. It's too insignificant to say this is a resistance, but it is short-term resistance level. And we'll see if the market can continue. And meanwhile, everybody is waiting to see what the Fed's going to do. What the Fed's going to say and what they're going to do, I think they're going to do very little to nothing. But what they're going to say is going to be, every investor, every trader is going to be listening for any hints. And what I'm thinking is we're going to see some volatility. Well, we already saw volatility today with Dow up 229. So, you know, we're already seeing it, and the Fed hasn't even announced what they're going to do. So just expect some volatility, up and down volatility. Then we'll see how it all shakes out. I'm curious as to what will the market reaction be to this. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. The general rule of thumb says that you will need approximately 70% of your pre-retirement income in order to maintain a lifestyle similar to that which you currently have before retirement. Now, unless maybe you want to travel a lot, or you're gonna, or have a great deal more medical expenses, or something comes up, you need that at least. Can we help you budget for retirement? We're here to talk about it. 888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to Art in Menlo Park, and then there's room for you. 888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to find out what to look for if I'm about ready to look at home equity lines of credit. Because I just wanted to have kind of like a safeguard just in case if I need emergency funds, I guess.
Okay. Well, of course, the interest rate is going to be important. They usually tie the rate, when you borrow the money, they tie it to some kind of cost of funds. Sometimes a U.S. Western, if you're in the West, U.S. Western District cost of funds, it's kind of a, sometimes it's LIBOR. You know, they tie it to something, usually, the interest rate. It's not like set, well, you're going to pay 5%. Not like that. They tie it to something, so if the interest rates go up, you pay more. They go down, you pay less.
Right.
Okay? So, really, the important thing is look to see what they're tying it to, and what's the maximum they can move in any 1 year, up or down.
Uh-huh.
You want to kind of have a channel where they can't move it up. They can't, like, it's 3% this month. Next month it's 6%. Something dramatically happens. You want to kind of keep it steady.
Do you have any idea of what maximum spread you should look for, like 3% over
usually it's like 1 to 2% over LIBOR.
Uh-huh.
The LIBOR rate. But remember, LIBOR was manipulated for a number of years. You know, they've got the LIBOR is the London Interbank Rate or something like that. And those guys were cheating all over the place for a long time. Hopefully, that won't happen to you. Art, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what really is an index fund? Okay, everybody knows about the Dow. The Dow is only 30 companies, everybody. 30, that's it. Okay, and an index fund is very, very simple because you can't buy the Dow, by the way. You can't buy the Dow because it's just an index, a number. It's a number. You add it, and for the Dow, it's pretty darn simple. You know, of course, it is the best known. It was invented in 1880. All they do is take the 30 most actively traded stocks. Okay, they take the price of those 30 stocks and divide it by 30. That's it. That's not necessarily the 30 biggest companies either. Apple wasn't in it. It's not in it. So we'll talk a little bit more about this. I would like to get to some of the other ways. But the Dow is probably the simplest of the indexes. This is Invest Talk. I thank you for investing this hour with me. Currently, if you are age 65, your life expectancy is approximately 21 years. Did you know that? It's 86. Your chances of reaching 90s is very high. It's a long time. And you may live longer very easy. So you've got to have enough money for that. So let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Large integrated companies and refiners represent investors' best chance for bargains in the oil industry. How investors should play oil's decline. That's our talking point for Wednesday's podcast. We hope you can join us then.
Let's go to Arthur in San Francisco. How are you doing, Arthur?
Hi, I love your show.
Thank you.
I would like to know what time to get into Luxonica. The symbol is LUX.
Luxonica Group, it is an Italian company. It's traded here on the New York Stock Exchange as an ADR, American Depository Receipt. So it's a foreign company out of Italy, operating with a presence on our stock exchange. It has 6,400 Sunglass Hut, Lens Crafters, Pearl Vision, and other eyewear stores worldwide. Okay, it is a $32 billion company. It's a pretty big company for doing those things. When to get in? Well, I think you got to be a little bit more patient. I would love to see you buy around in the low 60s. Right now it's 66. About 63 would be ideal, I think. And that's, I don't think you need to be a rush to get into this yet. So I would probably, that would be where I get in. As far as the fundamentals, they make money. They've always made money. They made, you know, they're growing their money, earnings about 10% a year for the next 2 years. But their sales are gone flat for this year, down a little bit to flat. And the problem is it is expensive. Their P.E. ratio based on next year's earnings is 30. And that's high. So it's an expensive stock. Management owns a lot of it. So, they're very interested in making sure that it makes money because they own a lot. So, but I, you know, if you wanted to buy it on a technical basis, around low 60, 63 would be best, right in that range. But it is expensive, Arthur. You're paying a high price for a stock. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we were talking about indexes, everybody. And I told you the Dow is 30 stocks that take the price divided by 30. The S&P 500 doesn't do that way. They don't take the price of 500 companies and add them up and divide by 500. That's not how they do it. The S&P is weighted by their market cap, the size of the company. And why is this important? Well, just think, if you had a company that is selling for $100 a share and it goes up a dollar versus a company selling for $10 a share and it goes up a dollar, in the Dow, it would be meaningless. I mean, as far as how much a small or big price of a stock, it wouldn't matter. Even though one went up 10%, one only went up 1%. It wouldn't affect, you know, the one that went up huge would not affect the price. In the S&P 500, that is calculated different. It would. The market cap is a market cap weighted index. So it would make a difference if a stock shot up a lot. Now, since it's spread over 500 companies, it doesn't make that much of a difference. But that's how they differentiate themselves. The S&P 500 represents like 70%+ of the overall market. All the companies, remember there's 8,000 stocks out there. So they represent about 70%. The S&P represents about 70% of the market cap, whereas the Dow represents about 20%. Now, everybody knows the Dow because it's been around forever. 1880, something like that. And in early 1920s is when the S&P came out about. So it's just more well-known, even though the S&P would probably be a better index to track. Now, when you buy an index mutual fund or an ETF, what are you really buying? Well, you're actually buying, what they do is they actually go out and buy those companies in those indexes and try to match the exactly weight of the index, and they're very good about that. Okay, so they try to exactly match the index that they follow, so that you actually own in the index all the stocks. Now, when you start getting to leverage index and triple leverage, double leverage, they don't own the shares. They're trying to approximate those shares and then trying to approximate them 2 and 3 times. And sometimes they're not successful and able to do that. They try, but they tell you right in the documents that they don't make no promises, no guarantees of whether they can follow the double or triple the index. So, you know, whenever you get whenever you want to buy one of those things, you should read the prospectus and see what they say. You know, that would tell you exactly. Indexing is a very good way to invest over long periods of time. It really is. But you can't try to get in and out and in and out. It's almost impossible. I mean, almost impossible to know when to get in. I can tell you this. When the market's really, really cheap, the overall market, then you can buy more. When it's really, really expensive, you can buy less and be more in cash. But that's about as close as I can get to telling you how to try to get in and out of an index. You really don't sell it or buy it. You just, you know, try to be more press it when the indexes are cheap, especially in a recession. That's when you want to buy more. Try to get people to buy more in a recession. The fear is just too rampant, and it's very difficult. Try to get them to sell when it's really high. Greed and fear set in on both those extremes. Where are we now? What's the market now? Right now. Do you know? You can see the latest dates for retirement reviews at investtalk.com. I will be meeting folks at September 23rd at our Dana Point office in Orange County. Then it'll be San Ramon on September 30th. If you'd like to schedule a retirement portfolio review with me, just go to investtalk.com and click on the schedule a meeting icon. You'll see it there. And I will be up in Portland. I have someone who wanted to meet with me, and I'm going to contact them, see if we can sit down and talk. Because I'm going up there to visit some relatives for the weekend. So I'll try to schedule an appointment or two if you want to see me in Portland. Give us a call. This is InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. So what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? The market was up pretty big today. Dow was up 229 points. S&P up 25. The Nasdaq up 55. Pretty good day. But this is the Fed funds meeting week. So you're going to see some volatility. And we've seen it today. Yesterday, the market was down, but it wasn't that huge of a move down. But today, it was pretty big move up. So we'll see what the Fed says later on in the week. InvestTalk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, you can still ask whenever you want to, and we'll play it on the next InvestTalk. We're here for you at 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART. Mike in Mill Valley had a question.
Hey, guys. I have a real beginner's question for you in terms of day trading and stuff like that. What are the tax implications when you're buying and selling all these stocks and making money? It's very confusing. And how do all these day traders make all this money? Thanks, guys.
Okay, all these day traders don't make all this money because 90% of them lose money all the time. Okay, it's a losing game, day traders. But you have to keep track of every trade. They're all short-term capital gains or capital losses, and you got to keep track of every one, every trade. And you got to know what it is. So you got that's one of the bookkeeping is very. Very annoying, let's put it that way. But, of course, there is software to help you with that. But you do have to keep track of every, and they're all short-term or in short-term gains and short-term losses. The losses offset the gains. So you just got to keep track and report them on your tax return at the end of the year. So what you do is, you know, on your tax return, you'll say, see Schedule A and attach a list of all the trades you made that year. Okay, all the realized gain losses for that year, so that the IRS can see every one of them. No fun. It's not fun. Trust me, not fun. Five reasons to double down and buy stocks today. What are some of the? There's five reasons. This is an article by Michael Brush that I read today, and I thought I'd share them with you. This is what he. I don't know if this is how he feels. He just wrote the article, but. Some of the reasons he's given are pretty decent reasons, but they're all negative. Kind of interesting. Number one, the investor's intelligence bear bull ratio, a sentiment gauge, fell for the seventh week in a row to very low lows. Okay, so this is kind of a contrarian call. It dropped to 0.92, the lowest since October 2011. That's number one. Your fellow investors freaked out and pulled record amounts of cash from equity funds, from stock funds. Over the 8 weeks ending in August 26, 8 weeks, investors pulled out $121 billion and put it into cash. Now, that was the same amount of cash 6 years ago. The same amount. in the same period of time before the market crashed 6 years ago. That's interesting. Third, the pros are scared. Only 24% of those recently polled by the National Association of Active Investment Managers were bullish. Only 24%. Remember, that means the other percent, the 76%, are bearish. And they're saying this is reason to buy the market. See, it's contrarian. Almost every one of these are contrarian. Now, this one isn't. The U.S. economy remains pretty sound. So why are all these people afraid? The economy looks pretty good. And the fifth reason, this is not a bearish reason either. Corporate insiders are surprisingly, amazingly bullish, buying a lot of their own stocks. What's called the Vickers Inside Weekly compares the ratio of selling to buying during the trailing week. Insiders always sell, by the way. They always are selling because because of options and everything else. But they have a gauge, and the ratio. So anytime the ratio dips below 2, that's a bullish sign. Okay, so how they come up with a ratio is neither here nor there. But the ratio right now is 0.54. Very, very deeply below 2. So the insiders are very bullish on their own company stock. So what is it? Should we be scared? Or should we be fearful? Or should we be greedy? It's hard to know, isn't it? It's hard to know. Everybody else is freaked out and out. I can tell you this. When it gets to an extreme, one way or another, that's when you go the other way. So are we at an extreme with insiders buying? Are we at extremes with people moving out of the market? If we are, then you buy into the market. But are we at the extremes? Don't know. It's hard to gauge. That's the hardest thing to gauge. InvestTalk is made possible each weekday by KPP Financial. Justin and I often talk about parallel investing. So it's important. It's an important factor for us here at KPP Financial, because my money is right alongside my clients. Good, bad, or different, I'm going to perform just like they do. And so we put our money where our mouth is. I'm personally investing my own personal funds, not the company funds, my funds, in the exact same things as the clients in our programs. So that's one of the reasons it should give you comfort to allow us to be your money managers. That's what we'd like to do. To learn more about our investment programs, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab.
A quick reminder, if there's a term that you hear mentioned on the program but you're unclear about what it means or you have a question about it, we want you to ask. It's very likely that you're not the only one with that same question. 888-99-CHART.
Podcast. My question is, what do you think of NSENNIS symbol EBF? Thanks.
First of all, it's a very, very small company called NS or Inc. Manufactures customized business forms, promotional media, and financial forms, and also activewear apparel. Pretty different types of businesses there. The company's out of Texas. It's a $417 million company, so it's very small. Therefore, it's going to be pretty volatile. They are making money. They've made money for years, so that's a good solid check mark in their on the good part of their ledger. They're going to make $1.42 this year. That's up 5% more. Actually, $1.42 next year, 2016. And $1.44 the year after that. They're growing sales about 6 or 7% per quarter. So that's not bad. Not too much debt. Management owns 4%. I wouldn't buy it because it's tiny. And if I'm going to buy a small company like this and take the big risk of owning a small company, I want it to be growing a lot faster than this company's growing. Now, don't get me wrong. It's very steady. Earnings have been pretty darn steady for a number of years, but I want better than steady. The stock is at $16.18, so it's not overpriced. It's not expensive. But what's the catalyst? What's going to make it worth more money? Return on equity is 11%, which is low, for a company that's small and growing. You would think the profits would be higher. You know, return on assets and equity should be higher. They pay a dividend yield of 4.3%, which is confusing to me because it's a really small company. Why are they paying a dividend? Wouldn't it be smarter to put all that money back in the company and try to get growth going? See, this is not the company I would pick because of those things. You would think with a 4.3% dividend, I would be all excited about that, but I'm not, because small companies really don't have the staying power to be paying a dividend. They need to grow their company and get to a bigger size so they do have the staying power to pay a dividend. Okay? Time for InvestTalk 101. Three ways to measure a stock. I just talked about return on equity. But how about cash flow from operation? Now, the cash flow measures, all the cash flow measures of a business are all more reliable than earnings. Because earnings can, by accounts, can be fudged. They could be manipulated. They can't. So a cash flow, looking at the cash flow is better, but you got to also be careful there because they could borrow money and show a lot of activity and it looks like their cash flow is higher. They could issue bonds or stocks and the cash flow throws off the cash flow. What you want is cash flow from operations. That's more clear what's actually happening. So cash flows are very important. Enterprise value. Many investors look at the total market cap or the market capitalization of a company to assess the worth or value. However, in a world of massive corporate borrowing, there it could look wrong. So enterprise value sums up the value of the equity outstanding and the total value of their debt. So it tells you the actual, if someone's going to buy the company, they know that what they have to buy, they pay for all the stock price, you know, stocks times the number, the price of the stock times the number of shares outstanding, plus they got to take on the debt. So that's what they're really buying for. So that's what the enterprise value is. Return on invested capital. Many of us look at return on equity, return on assets. I like those. Those are good numbers. And that gives you a sense of how profitable the company is. But return on invested capital takes debt and equity on the balance sheet into account. And they make it and relate that to operating profits. Sometimes it's ROIC, return on invested capital, ROIC. Sometimes it's expressed in the initials and you won't know what they mean. So it's very important kind of to know return on invested capital. That's InvestTalk 101. Got questions on this topic or any other topic? 888-99-CHART is our number.
Each month, Steve meets with a limited number of InvestTalk listeners for informal retirement reviews. The next date is at the home office in Dana Point in Orange County on September 23rd. Then it's off to San Ramon on September 30th. You can reserve your time by going to investtalk.com and clicking on Schedule a Meeting or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts.
Hi, my name is Adam. I listen to him podcast. I really enjoy your show. I have a question for you about Coca-Cola. I just wanted to get your opinion on the company and see what you thought might be a reasonable time to buy a position. Thank you.
Now, Coca-Cola, K-O, you know, it's Coca-Cola. It's a $167 billion company. And unlike the last one we had, they pay a 3.4% dividend, and that dividend is very stable. And it's always been going up over the years. Their earnings are very stable. They're going to make $2 and a penny this year, $2.12 next year. They made $2.04 last year, so they're going to make a little less this year. So the question is not about whether you should own Coca-Cola. It's a question of what price should I own it? And you should focus on, I own it because the dividend is really solid. Great return on equity, 29%. Good cash flow numbers. So this is where you focus. Now, what disturbs me is, you know, the carbonated beverage industry is shrinking. And Coca-Cola sales, as a result, has gone down 1, 2, 3% per quarter. Now, but got to remember, Coca-Cola makes non-carbonated drinks as well. They're like the world's largest seller of water and then energy drinks. You know, they know that their primary business is tough because they're everywhere. So they've made steps over the years. So I kind of like Coca-Cola on a long-term basis. Should you buy it here? Well, it's a good price at $38. But don't think that that's cheap. Remember, $2.12 next year, it's a $38 stock. So that's around, what, 16, 17 PE? That's not cheap. But Coca-Cola is so solid, that's a fair price for Coca-Cola. So I think that right in here is where you buy it. It's recently tested the recent lows it made when the market crashed. So this is a good place to buy it. Yeah, you're going to have to wait, but you're going to get 3.4%. That's what you're keying on. And that dividend will go up every year because it has for years and years and years. Okay, 888-99-CHART. Retail sales numbers were strong for auto dealers, but not for gas stations. But should we worry about the gas stations? I don't think so, because gasoline prices went down, so the numbers are soft there. So sales of U.S. retailers rose modestly in August as consumers got a little bit choosy. They bought cars and trucks, and they went out to eat a lot. They spent less on gasoline and home furnishings. Okay, so the number was up 0.2%. But if you take out the gasoline, you know, don't think about the gasoline, it was more like 0.4%, which is not bad. And the reason why I'm taking it out is because the price went down, and therefore it reflects less retail sales, but it's kind of misleading. That's not telling you. So you really want to go to the core retail sales. The core, that's really what's important. Now it's up 0.4%. In August, after a gain of 0.6 in July. So that's not too bad. Not great, but not too bad. So we're still on par. None of the numbers so far in this week would affect what the Federal Reserve is going to do with interest rates. There's nothing in there that tells you, the Fed's going to worry about this or that. In fact, inflation numbers are so subdued that they probably want more and more inflation. I know they want more inflation. But raising rates now when you don't have it, usually you raise rates when you have too much inflation. Well, we don't have hardly any. So why are they raising rates? I've mentioned that many times on the show. They're raising rates only because it's so low. What's the range? 0 to 0.25? That's what their range is. I think the actual rate, by the way, is 0.17. I think that's what it is, the Fed funds rate. If you have a question you want answered right now, do you know what the Fed funds rate is? We're here for you, 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. Remember, Steve makes time each month for a limited number of portfolio checkups for our podcast listeners anywhere in the U.S., It's easy to set up a time. Just go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting. The staff will take care of all the details.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Anthony in Hayward. How you doing, Anthony?
Good. Hi, Steve. I get a question about annuities, and I'm actually calling for a friend. Okay. She's kind of in a bind. What's happened is that her mom purchased an annuity many, many years ago, and at 62, she was supposed to be able to start getting a distribution.
Right.
But along the line, the mom wanted to add her, my friend, as the beneficiary. And somehow they added her name as part of the annuity. So now the mom cannot get a distribution until the daughter turns 62, and I feel like it's some kind of paperwork error.
Yeah, sounds like it.
But the problem is that she can't get in touch with the salesperson. So firstly, I wanted to find out, does this sound like that's what happened? And secondly,
Anthony, she can't go to the salesperson. That's not where it's going to get fixed. Okay? Mm-hmm. That salesperson, by the way, only knows very little about the annuity. He knows the high points, he or she. She needs to go, whoever the annuity insurance company is, she needs to go to the company direct and explain the problem. She needs to talk to someone in management, not just some customer service person, because this is an error. And if they just, she doesn't get any response, you know, over the phone right away, she needs to send them a letter, registered receipt, returned letter, explaining what their error was. Make sure she points out it's an error. And when, because insurance companies don't really do anything unless they get something in writing. And then they know, well, the attorney might get involved later down the road, so they need to get on this and do something about it. So she don't call the salesperson. That's not going to help you. They're not going to help you at all. It's the company that you need to get a hold of, whoever the insurance company is.
Right.
Okay.
Now, is there like a particular person, or, I mean, how can she find out who to send it to?
Okay, I would send it, I would just find out who the president of the company, I send it directly to the president. Of course, the president won't get it, but anything sent directly to him is more important than to someone, just someone, some salesperson or some office manager or whatever. Because, and if you send it return receipt, they know that someone is sending it to you with a thought of, I'm keeping track of what I'm doing here. Don't think you're just going to blow me off.
Yeah, and it's serious, too.
Yes, it's a serious problem. Please.
And when she sends it, typically, how long should she wait? Like a week, two weeks, a month?
No more than 2 weeks. No more than 2 weeks. Then I would talk to a lawyer, and it won't cost very much to at least send a letter on behalf of the, I mean, you may have to go that route, but it seems like a problem that can be fixed. Doesn't seem like it's an unfixable thing.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. Yeah, it's just that, you know, the salesperson doesn't want to call back, and, you know.
Well, that's because they made a mistake, and they don't want to, you know, they don't want to admit they made a mistake. So you got to go past them. You got to get above them.
Yeah.
Okay, Anthony?
Well, thank you so much, Steve.
Thanks for the call. Thank you for listening to the show. I appreciate it. Let's go to Saul in Livermore. How are you doing, Saul?
Doing well. How about you, Steve?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Thank you.
Hey, I have a quick question for you. I have a pension from a previous company I used to work for, and it's now eligible for a rollover to an IRA.
Okay.
And I was thinking either rolling over to one of my other IRAs, and then I heard you also, you do this. It's in the amount of about $30,000. Is that something I can do with your company?
You guys handle
these kind of things?
Yeah, that's the way I do.
Okay, so you...
And we can help you with the rollover, you know, if that, you know, we can set up the IRA if you already have one, we can help you set that up and roll it over. And I use big, huge custodians. Fidelity is my custodian, so they're the one that holds on to your money. So, you know, it's pretty safe. Pretty safe stuff.
Yeah.
So just give
I have some in Fidelity.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so I can send you an email or I can call you back or how do we do it?
You can send me an email, or you can just you can call me direct at my 800 number, 800-557-5461, or send me an email and I'll call you. Just give me your number and say, I talked to you on the radio, okay?
Fantastic. Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Before I close the hour, take a look at our library of investment webinars. You can have access to them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Like the new America, the growing strength in U.S. manufacturing. Do you know we're a pretty big manufacturing country? People think we aren't, but we are. We're big. It's available to all InvestTalk insiders. Join up for free on InvestTalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. On behalf of Justin Klein, everybody at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next InvestTalk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.